Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How about yourself?
Excellent. Doing all right. We've got an interesting show tonight because if you were with us last week, we only got through two of the questions that we've had sent in to us having to do with the COVID-19 and all the stuff that we have been talking about, presenting, and putting out there. So this is going to be part two, basically more questions and answers to be able to help you. Be prepared, get into the right direction. I know state of Ohio, dentists are allowed to start opening again. I'm not sure about Florida. What's Florida like, hon?
They're typically open, Jim. The beaches is open. So that's a good sign. When I look out my window, I can see the increase in the volume of traffic. So life seems to be rolling back to normal to some extent. A lot of your retail facility down here, they're limiting the volume of people coming into the facility. So normalcy is creeping back slowly. So it's a good sign.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the same thing here. It's beginning slowly. It's not, you know, throw open the doors and everybody come in, but they've got a systematic kind of way. And you, depending on where you're at within the country, you may be at a different level or more locked down. But bottom line is we've got a whole bunch of people that are – that haven't had any dental treatment for quite a while, and all your existing patients, they're probably wondering, what have you done? What have you done to make it safe for me? So before the show, Han and I were talking. We've been talking several days, but we were talking about that whole issue of perceived cleanliness or perceived safeguards. And it's just like anything. Here's an example. Restaurants are still closed in Ohio. Now, if they were to say tomorrow, open the doors to your restaurant and let everybody come in, would you be the first person to jump in the car and go down and sit in the restaurant full of people? I know I wouldn't. Han, I don't think you would either, right?
No.
Yeah. So, we're not.
No, I wouldn't.
Unless we know what the perceived sterilization procedures are, we're going to be leery. We're going to be very leery. I know there was an advertisement, well, actually not an advertisement, but there was an article on the TV news the other day where a local pizza shop is using a mobile UV light piece of equipment to sterilize the inside of their store. Now, they're still not allowed to let people come into the store. It's carry out only. But he said it's going to be clean when we allow people to come in because of that. So that's an example of proactively preparing for the customers, or in your case, the patients, to understand what you are doing or what you have been doing or what you in the process of doing to make them safe. So one of our questions that I think we want to jump into here real quick is Can I just have my contractor, for example, maybe a HVAC contractor that has done work at my office before, can I just have them come and install some of this stuff? Well, what do you think about that, Han? What should we tell our listeners?
Well, I think there's a, yeah, I think that's a tendency. Because I think you have to look at, there is, we have already concluded, and we've done a fair amount of research, is that there isn't a single system or a single solution approach to addressing infection control and so on. So you have a number of trade people that will need to be involved. So instead of simply handpicking one individual at a time and hopefully everybody's on the same page, I think the approach that I like to call it a whole system approach is that you do an assessment of what you have. Know exactly what your office, how it's built, what is there, and then you can go down the list and look at every system that will need to be addressed, and then you can take the appropriate step based on your timing, based on your finance, and so on, and start. Because I think if you simply, because everybody wants, I think everybody's hungry for work. And the worst thing that I think that you want to do is set yourself up for opportunists to to go in and take majority of the resource that you have to really address the issues. Yes, there will be there may be mechanical equipment involved, but you have a lot of other things that may need to be taken care of so that the whole system approach will work. Otherwise, you're just throwing money at, at one item at a time, and you may not get the full package or the full solution that you're looking for. Did I answer your question,
Jim? Without a doubt. Weren't you just talking with the dentist? Wasn't it even just today? Who? Her particular situation, she doesn't own the building. She said, she has so many years left that she wants to practice. And so her solution is going to be a different one from, let's say, the young doctor who maybe has just started out or has just, jumped into out of the associateship and just purchased a practice. And, he's got 15 or 20 or 30 years ahead of him where, he or she's going to be doing this for quite a while. That's a totally different solution, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we can put our potential client into two categories. You would have those who own their own real estate. They own the practice and own the real estate there with it. And they will approach the solution differently. Because most of those dentists are more established, okay? They may have more resource, more financial resource to really invest into the solution for the long haul. And then you have the group that you're talking about that those that are younger, who may left the associateship to start their own practice. They normally are heavily in debt. They may not have the resource to do a lot of things, but if you when you are a tenant, leasing and having a practice in somebody else's property, it doesn't make sense to dump a lot of money into it where you have to leave it when your lease is over. There is some of the strategies that we talked about. You can take it with you, so it's not a loss of investment. But again, everybody's circumstances are a little bit different. So if they own it, they'll do it differently. If they lease it, they'll do it differently.
Yeah. And that's an extremely important point. that you brought out, Han, an extremely important point, that there are systems and strategies that we have researched that are extremely effective, and they're able to go with you. They're like a piece of equipment. They're like, for example, a chair or a cart or something that is mobile, but something, there's other things and systems, for example, UV light systems that you literally can take with you. You can install them now and you can take them with you, and they're extremely effective and it's a very effective system to be able to put in place. So, just because you don't own your real estate, or if you're in the middle of a lease, there's solutions. And, we have that information, and obviously it's going to be tailored to your specifics. But to answer the question that was raised to us, can I just have my contractor tell me what to do and basically install this stuff? And I guess in a very short answer, we wouldn't recommend it. Not that the contractor doesn't know what they're doing. That's not wrong. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the contractor doesn't have the knowledge base of all the particular systems. They may only have the knowledge base of one area. For example, maybe filters or how to put UV light in. Or something like that. So, or how to create a negative pressure room. Well, all three of those things are potential solutions, none of which will solve it by itself. In combination, the right combination, you can get your facility to be a sterile environment in a sense of it'll get rid of these contaminants. Build was just last, was the other day. I think it was last week, had a presentation that was, that he attended where they were talking about the possibility of outside air being contaminated and being sucked into the building through your HVAC equipment and contaminating the rest of the building. And the whole premise around that was that the exhaust fans are taking the pathogen along with the water particles and the molecules and all the little dust and whatever, and it's got this virus attached to it. It throws it outside, and it disperses it around, and next thing you know, it's getting sucked back into the HVAC equipment. Well, code has always said, up to this point, that exhaust fans, like for example, exhaust fans out of your bathroom, your restrooms, go right outside. Okay, you're not allowed to keep those or exhaust into the building. You exhaust those directly outside. And I think the code does require that it has to be 10 feet away from any HVAC equipment. Well, because of this particular situation and this particular virus, 10 feet away is not far enough. So there is a strong possibility that you can get contaminated air sucked right back into your building. And if you don't have the ability to properly decontaminate that air, you're spreading it throughout the whole building. So, I mean, it just becomes a vicious circle, a cycle, doesn't it?
Yes. Actually, the diagram that was presented to us has a few pieces of information that I thought a little bit misleading. Okay. We normally, both Jim and myself, have been in the field of architecture for a long time. And even with the amount of collective knowledge that we and experience we have experts that we go to when it's, when it's out of our realm of expertise. And in this particular situation, it's deal with mechanical. But the diagram that was presented to us is that it show that the there's a couple of things. It show the air that being exhausted out of the bathroom go up on the roof, and then it gets that airstream get sucked back into the building through an intake grill. It was not they didn't show it taken through the equipment. So it's like an open shaft you suck that bring the air, the contaminant air back into the building. All buildings in the United States, whether you're in the in the arid desert or in the cold environment like Alaska, we heat the air or we cool the air, and it's all done mechanically. So the equipment that are placed on your roof that takes in the air are usually filtered, first of all, that to protect the equipment. So the leaves and large debris doesn't get into the building and collect in the equipment. So it gets heat and it cool and it distributes to the building. That air is outdoor air. We often say, I'm going outside for some fresh air. So the outdoor air is a lot healthier for you than the indoor air. When that air gets, so that is how it works. The air, once the contaminated air that are vented out of the bathroom gets up above the roof, typically it doesn't, focus and go to a piece of equipment. It gets dispersed. Is there a possibility that some of that contaminant air can get back, get sucked in and back into the building to the equipment? Yes. Yes, it can. That's why a lot of time the vent is placed usually downwind from the equipment. The intakes is usually faced away from those vents. So all code dictates certain precautionary measures to minimize that potential condition to happen.
Yeah. You're exactly right, Han. But let's look at this scenario, which that diagram didn't talk about, but it's a real possibility. Let's say you talk with the HVAC contractor and you say you want to have negative pressure in all your ops. Okay, so he puts in exhaust fans in all your operatories. Those exhaust fans dump the air outside. Well, are they putting the air outside far enough away from your equipment so it's not being sucked right back in and recirculated into the space, effectively eliminating the benefit of the negative air pressure? So, because negative air basically collects all of the aerosol within that room, keeps it in there, and then you suck it out of there and discard it outside. Well, I think the premise that they're talking about is once it's outside doesn't mean it's dead. It's not, it's still active.
It's
still
alive.
And it's still obviously very easily can contaminate somebody. I'll tell you a funny story. Right here where we live, I live close to the Maumee River, and it's world famous for the walleye fishing spring spawning run. And there'll be hundreds of thousands of fishermen lined up shoulder to shoulder out there in waders out there trying to catch the walleye. And it's basically a city of Perrysburg and the city of Maumee. This mayor of Maumee closed the river because the fishermen were standing too close to each other and not, basically having social distance outside. And so, that's a funny story, but it is an example of what we're talking about. If someone out there is too close to you and, they cough or they sneeze, and you're downwind of them, boom, all that stuff goes all over top of you, and if they're contagious, you're contaminated. Well, it's no different than what we're talking about with this exhaust fan and negative air pressure. So the point being, you can't just go do one thing and say, I got it. Or you can't just do one system and say that that should suffice without looking at all the other systems to make sure that you don't do something that actually makes more harm than good.
That makes sense. Got it?
Yep. That makes sense. Well, so I guess the question that would be raised, the next logical question is, well, what do you do? Well, I think we've already said before, and feel free, you know, give us a call. Get a hold of us, get a hold of myself, get a hold of Han, send us an email. And, you know, for we'd love to be able to help look at your system, do an evaluation, and at least give you a direction so that you don't get yourself into a scenario where maybe one thing is done and you think you're doing this great thing, but in reality, it actually maybe it harms your whole system more than it helps. And, you know, we're here to help for that. Now, before we jump into the other thing, obviously, we had talked about, and I wanted everybody to know, if you don't already, that both myself, Han, Bill, and Mark Bly did a video podcast with Dr. Tom Oren, the gem guy. And it's on his website, his YouTube website. So if you want to you know, hear a complete overview of all this kind of stuff, and there was a really cool slide presentation that was part of it. So there's the graphics to go along with it. You know, if you're tired of just listening to Han and I's voice, you can actually see some visuals there. So go to that. I'm not sure exactly how to get to it. Han, do you happen to know that?
I no, right offhand, Joe. I think you just log into the Gem Guy because he have his blog pages, and you probably can see that. We should take a look at ourselves. Okay,
yep.
But there's a lot of information.
Yeah, I just looked it up. It's called 1000gems.com, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it's not. He definitely has the Facebook account. It's the Gems Guy. He's right there. That's his Facebook thing. But you can get it on there. So I wanted to let everybody know about that. It is it's out, and I think it was pretty interesting, very well received, and I know a lot of people have already had a chance to look through it and gain some information from that. So let's jump into our next one, and Han, this is one that's going to fall right into your lap because I know you and I have discussed this at length, and this has to do with the question that was raised. I have open operatories. Meaning, my operatories are maybe separated by walls, but I do not have doors. What are my options, or what do I do? So what do you think, Han?
I think that is a loaded question, Jim. Okay. Typically, I mean, the whole purpose of having walls is to basically contain the, you know, your biggest nemesis, the aerosol, from spreading everywhere. This is going to be a big major change for you, particularly for the younger dentists. You know, the older dentists probably was accustomed to at one time working in offices with doors. For some reason, doors disappear probably 20, 25 years ago. They started to disappear out of dentist offices. I remember when I was first came into the field of architecture, back in the early 80s, there was some national case that was televised almost 24/7 about inappropriate touching. And it deals with, I think it was involved in the school. When you go to the principal office, the principal's office have all the doors are solid. Nobody can see anything, and so on and so on. And a few accusations get thrown around. The next thing you know, there's a lot of glass everywhere. Doors starting to have a lot of glass. Walls starting to be filled with glass windows because nobody want to get in trouble. They want to have witness. So doors in dentist office probably went from a solid door to doors with a lot of glass. And then eventually, probably for production purpose, the ease and convenience of getting in and out of the, operatory without having to touch the door, especially after you glove up and stuff like that. So you got rid of the door. It saved you some time. So it helped with the production and stuff like that. And boom, we're in this situation where there is literally the only door that you have in a treatment room would be the quiet room or the surgical room. And then the rest of the treatment room would have no doors, just basically a doorway. And then you have your pediatric dentist, orthodontist. They have the open bay. So what do you do? It would have to be handled on a case by case, okay? But we're talking in general, we're talking about general dentist offices. Doors, I wish that it's an easy solution. When it comes to putting in doors, because
Han, I want to interrupt. Doors are coming back.
Yes,
are coming back. You will be putting doors on your operatories.
There is a couple of reasons for it. Okay, I think it has to do with aerosol management. Now, one area that's rarely ever talked about is HIPAA, because, a conversation in one room without doors will carry into the next room. If you do your presentations of cases and stuff like that in your treatment room, I'm surprised you haven't heard too much citations and lawsuits pertaining to HIPAA violations. But anyway, we're not talking about HIPAA tonight in any detail. But I look from a mechanical standpoint, from a strategy of maintaining, controlling, getting rid of aerosol and spreading of the pathogen. So that door seems to be the next big answer, because it's easier to manage and control and care and treat a single room than a big open space. Okay, it's you have much more effectiveness in filtering out a single room than the entire open building. Okay, so is that a simple is adding a door a simple solution? No. Okay. If you are in a office with a treatment room that are, compacted, 8 feet wide or 8 foot four or even 8 foot six, the likelihood of putting in a door, particularly swinging door, would be very difficult. I remember that if you don't have a door, there is no really ADA issue, as long as it's minimum 32 inches wide. So if you put in a door, it has frames, and then you have the thickness of the door and the opening from the, from the edge of the stop to the face of the door have to be 32 inches. So the likelihood is you're going to have to put in a 36 inch door, okay, plus the frames. So if you don't have the width in your treatment room, putting in a door or two doors, or worse, two doors, it would be virtually almost impossible. The only exception is if you have your delivery system, or the door would be a toe approach, where you open the door and you're looking at you're facing the patient, looking at their toe. That would be probably the only the easiest, simplest solution if you have to put in doors. But majority of the practice have their 12 o'clock wall. You do your four-handed dentistry. You use rear delivery. That would be a problem when it comes to putting in doors. Okay, but we have to assess how that can be done and things like that. It's just not simply call the lumber yard, call your carpenter, and throw their door in, because putting in a door may violate the ADA requirement. So you should have design professional help you through that process, analyze it, and see if there's a solution that can be done.
Right.
But
come up with that solution, Han. You and I have talked about that. And it's a system. It's basically a sliding door, either a pocket or a sliding, depending on your particular situation. That is ADA approved and can work and will compartmentalize that operatory so that you can do something with it. You can filter the air in it. You can create a negative pressure. You know, there's a lot of things that you want to try to accomplish in that operatory. So if you're telling your HVAC contractor that you want to do a negative air pressure in your operatory and you do not have doors on your operatories, you're basically going to negative air pressure your whole building, and that's an impossibility. We talked about that. It doesn't work. It's not practical. It's not a solution. So you've got to figure out how to get doors back on your operatories. And, you know, there's multiple solutions. Each one has potential ramifications. Swinging doors are obviously the cheapest door, but it may not be practical, like you talked about. Sliding doors or pocket doors, they're a little bit more expensive, and they have some nuances about them and how they have to be integrated and properly placed, and using the right kind of hardware, both for the operation aspect and for the handle, to be able to operate the door. Again, you can't just go buy this stuff at Menards or Home Depot or Lowe's and put it in. You got to have the right kind of system that works. There is nothing worse. There's nothing worse. One of my biggest bugaboos next to a double pair of doors where one door is always locked is a sliding door or a pocket door that has cheap hardware, where it virtually is impossible for that door to be opened by any normal person because of the crappy hardware and crappy rollers and everything else, and the things don't work well. That is the worst possible scenario.
And often that's what you hear about pocket doors. There's
that's
so much problems.
Yeah, most of the time,
because
that's you got to get the good stuff. You got to get the right commercial duty, heavy duty grade stuff that is designed to open and close, open and close, open and close, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times without failure. It exists.
Without it jumping the track. You know, I mean, I've been in homes and buildings that was turn of the century with pocket doors. This is big, gigantic, solid core, solid wood doors. Okay,
that weigh hundreds
and
of
they
thousands
operate.
Of pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, and they operate, okay? And then you go into buildings that were built 10 years ago or so, and you touch the door, and the door swing, pocket door that swing. And you're like, what's wrong? I mean, because cheap hardware. Now, let me see. Dentist office is probably one of the most unique places that you'll find a heavy concentration of usage of pocket doors. It's rather interesting because in my career, I've never actually specified and used a pocket door until we do dentist offices, okay? And I discover a number of things. Just because when you think of ADA compliant hardware, Jim, what is some of the first thing that you think of?
Well, obviously,
the
ADA
knob,
compliant. Yeah, there's a lever. It did away with the knobs. The round and oval shaped knobs are gone, and you end up with a lever so that an individual who is, in fact, has limited ability or handicapped from that regard, they can open and close the door with the lever.
Right. One of the things that the ADA requirement for hardware to be in compliant is that the individual do not have to. Let me see. This is very common in pocket door. Is that to open the door, you typically use your fingertip, and you put it into the little recess cup that they have. And you use your fingertip to push the door open or close. Okay? That in itself is not ADA compliant. That recessed hardware. Also, the hardware that on the leading edge of the door where you have to stick your finger and push the little rod out and grab it with the two finger and pull it, that in itself is not ADA compliant. And I am so surprised how many hardware for pocket door label that to be ADA compliant. They're not. Okay. So yes, we have done a fair amount of research, and there is only one mechanism that are truly ADA compliant out of everything that are sold out there in the marketplace for pocket doors. We have the secret, by the way.
And it works. And yep. It works.
Yes.
So, you know, that's that whole multiple layer approach to the solution. What is the solution? And the solution here really has to do with having all the knowledge and putting it together and so that you can have doors back on your operatories. Now, we're not saying that sliding or pocket doors are the ultimate solution for everybody. It might not work. Your configuration may be such that there's no way that you can do it because of multiple things. It could be stuff in the walls. It could be stuff adjacent to the wall. It could be the wall configuration itself or the inability to even put walls in because you've got an open plan. Where you basically just have chair, 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 chair. And so that all has to be looked at. So it's, again, to answer the question, you can't just have the contractor come do it. And without a doubt, you better start looking at doors. I know we told Bill that. He didn't like to hear that, but you know, it's going to happen. You're going to be putting doors on your operators.
Yeah. Yes. There's going to be a lot of pushback on it. Okay.
Yep. In his case, he's got arches. Every one of the openings going into his operatories have arches on them. So it's an arched opening. Looks really nice. It's very attractive.
Yes.
Try to put a door on that.
they'll be custom. Okay. Here's a prime example. Here's a prime example of why doing things on your own sometimes gets you in trouble. Okay, I'm hoping this particular dentist is listening. I got a call early in the week and say, hey, what is the height of the side cabinets need to be? Like, so, you know, there's dentists that still use side cabinets. A lot of that is personal preference. And I say, well, what do you have? He said, I used to have 29 inches high. And my cabinet guy built it, and it is 34 inches. And then once you put the countertop on it, it's 36 inches. I say, you're in trouble. okay? You're sitting in, you are, you know, nowadays dentists sit in their chair and they roll around the room when they need to. So you roll up to the counter at 36 inches size, almost at your shoulder height. All right? It's not a desk height. And if your contractor don't know that and you don't know that, both of you are in trouble. Because what happened, they're custom built. They need to be cut down or rebuilt. Okay? Contractor, typically, this is the rule. They're not the exception. Contractor usually built what others designed, whether it's an engineer or an architect. Sometimes maybe interior designer. But they don't normally design. They rely on other people's knowledge to make sure that, you know, they do their work right. So don't go solo. Just because they own a truck, a utility belt, and a hammer, they may not be the right individual to help you do all of this. Jim?
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm going to throw another kicker at it. Let's say you have doors and you're going to put in a pocket door or your sliding door, and you listen to our presentation with Dr. Tom, and one of the things buried in the middle of the presentation, we talk about touchless devices, meaning faucets, fixtures, water closets, door openers. Okay. Now, that seems like, well, wait a minute. You got to have ADA compliant door hardware. I've got to put a pocket door or a sliding door in. Now, your guys are talking about putting in automatic sensors or push pads or those kind of things to be able to open and close a door, because the reason why we're saying that is you want to minimize touching of surfaces because of contamination. So the answer, the question is, can you have a pocket or sliding door be activated by a push pad or a motion detector? And the answer is yes. You can.
Yes.
Okay. Now, it was futuristic, if you remember back in, what, Star Trek? A long, long time ago?
That's a different door, Jim.
Yeah, it's a different door, but it's still a door. And it did open by a motion detector. And yes, the technology exists, and it's reliable technology where you can have motion activated or push pad activated pocket or sliding doors. So it's there, and it does work.
I'm going to throw this into the mix, Jim. Okay, if there's any of you truckie out there, and you want to have one of those, you know, one of those Star Trek door in your office, I know where to get it. Okay.
Yeah, we can make that happen. It'll actually even make that cool sound.
Yeah, I've done a couple of projects where they use those doors, and they are pretty expensive, very expensive. Okay, but it's cool to have.
Well,
Jim?
and it is functionally something that you might want to look at, because you're not touching anything. Because of that, you eliminate or reduce the risk of contamination. And, you know, going from one space to another space, touching door handles, touching door knobs, that kind of stuff, you know, potentially is a source of contaminant. So it's possible. And there's a lot of possibilities. I think we've taken the doors to the level that, other than, I guess, in the sense that there is one area that we haven't talked about and having to do with doors, and this would be at a more than likely in a new configuration or a new design, where we talked about a double door scenario where you came in one door and went out the other door. And when you do our listen to our video and presentation with Dr. Tom, we talk a lot about that. But this kind of segues us into the next question. And the question is, you guys have talked about this one way in and one way out, basically social distancing and keeping individuals separate from and not crossing traffic. The thought behind that is you come into the dental office and you're basically not contaminated, let's say. Or, you know, it's not all over you or not all over your body or your clothes or anything like that. And you go back into and you do a procedure. All the aerosol spreads all over the place. It spreads all over the walls, the ceilings, the floors, everybody within the space. It just happens. We've got diagrams. We've got research. You can see all that. So it's all over you. So you have to think about, okay, that person, if they were gowned, you get rid of the gown. If they're not, then they're contaminated by all that aerosol. So when they leave, do you want them passing by a person who's come into the building who is not contaminated? So the answer is no. Of course, you would like to separate them. So that's why we've had that discussion about the one way in and the one way out and how you want to keep the two groups of people separate from each other. And things like staggering, the ability to stagger people as they come in and stagger people when they come out. But inevitably, it's the whole idea of one way in, one way out. So, Han, let's talk a little bit about what you've come up with and what we've talked about in what regards to the in and out separation.
Yeah, I think the discussion is not, or the idea of dedicated, indoor and outdoor, it's not new. Okay, a lot of the discussion that I partake in is that the premises, you don't want the patient in the waiting room do not want to see the patient exiting with bloody gauzes. So typically you want to direct them to a different door out. In a dentist's office, that sometimes that particular design feature takes up more circulation room. And a lot of dentist's offices are pretty tight in space. So, you would have a common one door, for in and out. You have one main corridor for all traffic and things like that. We were thinking of what can you do to minimize exposure, to have more dedicated in and out. And so the door, you come in like a sick room of a doctor's office. All the sick people come into the waiting room. They go through for the treatment, and when they're done, they exit. They're healthier, and they exit the healthy side of the building. So it actually, the design is to have, two circulation corridors, one for the sick and one for the clean. Part of the design also, what we envision the change, some of the change going to take place in the future design of dental office. So we look at if you have a treatment room and it's in the main corridor, if that person come out into the main corridor mixed with the incoming traffic and stuff like that, wouldn't we be kind of self-defeating? So part of the design is to have treatment room that you enter one end and you exit the other end. It's almost like a drive-through garage, okay? And that worked well. It would have to take a certain set for your equipment. The size of the treatment room, surprisingly, it doesn't get any bigger, because the standard treatment room, if you have side cabinets, are ranged between 10. That is, if you have cabinets on both sides, and it range between 10 to 10.6 in width. but typically 10. So if we take the cabinet out, even if we leave one, you know, leave one cabinet, regardless which side, we still have the room to put in a ADA compliant door on the other end for exiting. So it worked out well, and the room that we used, I think, was at 9496, which is not small nor big. So that worked out well. So that's a feature that that we entertain to see how it can be, how the layout can work so that you don't take up too much space, you don't mix the traffic too much. And so it would be interesting to see what the future in the design of dentist's office really turn out to be once the guidelines and mandates start to solidify. Jim?
Right. Now, we also have taken, for example, Bill's office, which is a little bit larger office, but it has it just has several corridors in it because there's some internal operatories, there's some external operatories, meaning they're on exterior walls and that kind of stuff. And we reconfigured it by creating one way in and one way out. So corridors become direction. And by doing that, you can still maintain that separation of individuals coming in, do not cross paths with people that are the patients that are leaving after a procedure. So, it's all dependent upon your particular situation, and we'll be able to look at that and solve that, or at least give you some recommendations on how to do that. Now, we had to get rid of Bill's pinball machine to be able to accomplish that and put in a new door on one side of his lobby, but we did that, and actually he liked it. He liked it a lot.
I think his staff would love it because pinball machine people can get a little too excited on pinball machine.
Let alone keeping that dang thing clean. Exactly. But, there are possibilities, even with your existing space, to be able to look at and see what options you have available to you.
Let me interject with that, Jim. Okay?
Yeah.
What we're talking about, again, we're going to circle back to the term, total system solutions. Okay? Is that you look at everything and you look at what you're trying to resolve, how it can be done, because I haven't run into a dentist that have unlimited resource yet, okay? So we have to make sure that your resource can be utilized in the most effective ways possible with as little disturbance to your existing facility, because majority of the time, it could be the greatest solution, but telling you that you need to shut down for a couple months for the renovation is off the table. Okay, so it's not simply calling Joe, your friend who's a carpenter, to come by and fix things. It need to be looked at a much deeper level, so that way as you proceed, you're not fixing something to create some other problem with that fix. That's important. That's important for us. That should be important for you, because it's time and money.
Right,
Jim?
Because the piecemeal option could bite you. It really could cause you some serious harm. And as we started our show, we talked about that perceived cleanliness and perceived sterilization and perceived safeguards. I mean, everything that you do to prepare for opening those doors if you haven't opened already, or everything you should that you're in the process of doing while you're starting to gear back up again, you should let all of your patients know. I mean, we're talking about, you should put out literature. You should put stuff on your website. You should do, I mean, flyers, whatever you want to do, however you want to accomplish it. But you should put this up in neon lights that this is what you're doing to maintain a clean environment for your patient. Because I'm sure a lot of patients are apprehensive. They're like, wait a minute, the governor of my state is saying I have to wear a mask when I go outside, but I'm going to go to the dentist and you're going to take off my mask and you're going to start working in my mouth. That doesn't seem safe. So you know, you really got to get out there and put this stuff out. You know, literature. You know, however you want to market it. And I guess when you think about it, it is actually a marketing issue. You've got to be able to portray that your facility is clean. It's, you know, sterilized, and these are the systems and processes that we're using to be able to accomplish that. That'll go a long way in helping your client base to under your patients to be able to understand what you've accomplished and why you're doing it.
I think Jim and I were just talking about also right before we went on the air is that, you know, your majority of dentist office, and I want to say all dentist office. Really, they really, everybody try to, their best to let their patient know that they care, that they invest in the latest technology so they have better odds of better chance of providing a better level, higher level of treatment. You've seen the airway with a lot of commercial were restaurants and business that tells you that they had taken a proactive step. They put in the sneeze guard. You know, they put directional arrow on the floor so that where everybody needs to stand, so they have the social distance. So that they took those, they invest the money into letting you know, the public, their consumer, know that they care. They're proactive. And that they do that on your behalf to keep you safe and healthy. A dentist's office is no different. You are a business. If you want to set yourself apart from the other dentists down the road, I'm not trying to kind of pit one against the other, but you want to convey the same message, is that you already take the necessary measure to provide the necessary barrier. Have the proper PPE, filtration system technology, things that you can do that they can physically, visually see that you actually invest in measure for their safety and their health. And naturally, it should be for you and your staff, but knowing that, seeing that, it speaks volume, and it tells them that you truly care. Okay. You want their trust. They have your trust. That's why they come to you, but you want to reinforce that. And, what we're saying is that don't just simply throw money at it. Sit down, analyze what you have and take, intelligent step to meet those requirements, meet those objectives. So that way you don't have to, tear down things that you just spent money on because it wasn't done properly. Jim?
Let me add one last thing. And I guess I want to, our show is called Straight Talks and we'll be real straight. A new building, a new space is not any cleaner, is not any more sterile than an existing building or an old space. That is a falsehood, a fallacy, because the minute you open those doors to a brand new clean facility and you do one procedure within that operatory, that building is contaminated. No different than a building that's been around for 14 or 15 years. So Don't fall for that direction that, oh, well, I can put a coat of paint on something, or I can get, you know, have a new space, or I can do something like that. It's going to be a clean facility. No, it's not. Because literally the day you open the doors and you do a procedure, the facility is just as contaminated as any other facility that's been around for years and years and years. And so, you know, I guess we just wanted to make sure that everyone understood that and, you know, can make the appropriate decisions around that. So with that, obviously, we did better tonight, Han. We got through three questions as opposed to only two. So we're doing good. We're very thankful for you guys listening. Hopefully it's been informative. Send us your questions. Get a hold of us if you have any. You'd like to speak directly. You can get us on our website, all that kind of good stuff. So, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, for those of you that that already opened, I hope the I hope things go well. I hope that you know, patient is pouring back in and getting back to normal. Again, we blew to an hour. I appreciate and enjoy the time. Thanks for plugging in and listening to us. Just chat away. Stay well. Stay safe. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.